Revelation 8, starting verse 7, and the first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood. And they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees were burnt up, and all the green grass was burned up. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. And a third part of the sea became blood, and a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And a third part of the ships were destroyed. And the third angel sounded. There fell a great star from heaven, burning as it were a lamp. And a third part of the rivers and upon the fountains of the water. And the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many people died of the waters because they were made bitter. And the fourth angel sounded, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of the moon, and the third part of the stars, so as the third part of them were darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. And I heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, "Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by the reason of the other voices of the trumpets of the three angels which are yet to sound." And into this world we are now entering, a world in this condition, a world that millions will live into and be left and yet alive. And Revelation 16 continues, and the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and the fountains of the waters, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters say, "Thou art righteous, O Yahweh, which art and was and shall be, because you have judged us. For they have shed the blood of the saints and the prophets, and you have given them blood to drink. For they are worthy." And I heard another out of the altar say, "Even so, Yahweh El Elyon, true and righteous are your judgments." And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and the power was given to him to scorch men with fire. And the men were scorched with great heat and blasphemed the name of Elohim, which had power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. And verse 18, and there were voices and thunderings and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty was the earthquake. And into this chaotic and desolate landscape, either we or our children or our grandchildren and millions of other frail human beings, the totality of humanity, will find themselves a part of and dependent upon what is left over. Now consider the state of Isaac. Isaac is a 26-year-old man who has come through all this and is hiding with a few fellow Marine friends in an abandoned remains of a warehouse in southern Wisconsin Industrial Park. On the bank of what was once a crystal clear, spring-fed glacial lake, but no more. Despite his isolated and remote location, he and his friends, well, the air is filled with soot. He and his friends are getting by with whatever they had, using their Marine training, knives open to cans, and rationing and sharing, but the source is almost gone. There's no more fish in the red polluted lake in the nearby Bark River. A few cans are left. His friends are asleep, hard to arouse. He has a fever, and boils over his body are worsening. His resistance to infection is waning. His vision is cloudy. He can just barely see the distant shadows now, and his mind is confused. What will life be like for this young man? He thinks back to his boyhood. He remembers kayaking down the nearby Bark River with his grandpa and Aunt Ashley, rapidly through the narrows and ducking under low-hanging willow branches, frightening unaware geese and ducks and stopping to observe a beaver dam in the tributaries. He remembers college and graduating in his Marine uniform. He was off to see the world, to see the glimpses of the tough-fought battles in Venezuela and Gaza and Bosnia and back to Afghanistan and the Horn of Africa. Hung up here. And then on to New Kurdistan and Lebanon and Syria and Iran. But mostly right now, he remembers Susie's bright face in her low-cut gown at the Marine Ball. Now, was that last year? Was it 2 years or three or five? He's not quite sure. Wonder whatever happened to Susie. Communications broke down with the first stratospheric fireball and its crippling electromagnetic pulse. Months went by in his mind, the time in his life, speeding by in seconds. Can't remember quite now how eight of his Marine buddies happened to be near his old home in Wisconsin. When the seals were open, then the trumpets, it is all so confusing, such a blur. They are Marines and they leave no man behind. He does remember that there were 10 of them when the second fireball appeared. Now he can only see three. And are they still alive? He doesn't know. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, the pivotal event in world history, the crux of time, the momentous happening, it is time's up. The final trumpet sounds and the sky peels open. Even from here in Wisconsin, a hologram projects through the gray-yellow haze. Isaac can see the sky full of white horses led by one on whose banner is read, King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and Yahweh is one. Yeshua, the Messiah, has returned. The open scroll in the sky is projected to the whole world, all places and all times and all latitudes to behold him. The whole world beholds this, projected into a screen in the overhead sky. And the sound of the Takia, Teruah, Shavarim, Takia, Godanal, on the golden trumpet, and the sound is projected all around the world. Yeshua and his Kadashim have touched ground on the Mount of Olives. It is now day one, Jerusalem Standard Time. Back in Wisconsin, Isaac and his three friends hear it, they see it, they feel it, the hologram in the sky and the deep vibrations penetrating their bodies as the landing occurs on Mount of Olives. And suddenly they're awake and aware of what's going on and alert, but they are weak and frail. Isaac and his friends manage to smile at each other, but too weak to speak. Now they feel a gradual soft peaceness and then drift off into a much needed sleep. Yeshua and the saints, called Kodeshim, entered Jerusalem, quickly establishing the headquarters of the world of tomorrow, a kingdom of Yahweh, the millennium. The governments of this world are overthrown. Yeshua the Messiah reigns supreme. What a moment. What a time. Hallelujah. Baruch Hashem. Isaiah 40 says, behold, Yahweh Elohim will come with a strong hand, and his arms shall rule for him. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. And he shall feed his flock like a shepherd, shall gather their lambs with his arm, and carry them in his bosom. And it shall gently lead them, those that are with the young. Some time has passed, hours, days, he's not sure. But Isaac slowly awakens to see a distant glow in the eastern sky, growing larger, moving without sound, coming his way. Isaac and his two friends crawl over. Look, it's a bird, it's a plane. No, it's a Kadashim. Comfort you, my people. They are to go forth to comfort, to heal, and then to gather the remnants of his people in the four corners of the earth. Akadesh flies through the air to Wisconsin, and there he finds Isaac and his ailing friends. All over the world, thousands of Kadeshim travel to bring emergency aid to the millions of human beings who are just barely hanging on. They miraculously provide for those who are famished, weak, blind, lame, those who are undernourished, all who are in this frail remnant. The people so cared for, they're fed and they're clothed and they're healed in body and spirit. And then they are resettled. They're called Kodesh, the holy ones, plural Kodeshim. I am Yoni. I have come here and I have revived you. And now I give you a mission. Isaac, you're to take charge. More of your brothers and sisters are scattered nearby. I will bring them here, and we will meet you on the south bend of the Bark River. Make 10 rafts. You know the river well. Many more will join you for a portage into the Rock River. There you will find bigger rafts for a trip to the junction of the Mississippi. Take the Rock River through southern Wisconsin into the northern Illinois to the river mouth near where the Green River also joins the Mississippi. There, larger crafts will be provided for you and others joining you there, and I can be reached by calling my name. Now, these little ones, these survivors, are gathered. They're protected by the chief shepherd himself. He prepares their food, their drink. He provides their covering, their shelter. He who is personally and emotionally comforting them. He who provides gentleness to them, to those who have lived through this most violent time in human history. He extends his personal help through his Kodeshim. And thus says Yahweh of hosts, it is be a marvelous thing in the eyes of the remnant of the people these days. Should it also be marvelous in mine eyes, says Yahweh of hosts. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the east country and from the west country, and I will bring them, and they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and they shall be my people. I will be their Elohim in truth and in righteousness. And Jeremiah says, behold, I will bring them from the north country and gather them from the coast of the earth, and with them the blind and the lame and the woman with child and her that travails with child, they're together. A great company shall return thither, and they shall come with weeping and with supplications, and I will lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers in a straight way, wherein they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of Yahweh, all you nations, and declare it in the isles far off, and say, he that scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd does his flock. Isaiah further says, arise, shine, for your light is come, and the glory of Yahweh is risen upon you. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people, but Yahweh shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you, and the nations shall come to your light, and the kings with the brightness of your rising. Lift up your eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together, they come to you. Your sons shall come from afar, your daughters shall be nursed by your side. Then you shall see and flow together, and your heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted to you. The forces of the Gentiles shall come to you. And in the day of the Lord, and the day of the Lord will extend his hand yet a second time to recover the remnant of the people from Assyria and from Egypt and Panthos and Cush and Elam and Shinar and from Hamat and from the coastlands of the sea. And he will raise a signal for the nations and assemble the banished of Israel and gather the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. And the multitudes of camels shall come, O cover you, the dromedaries of Midian and Ephah. All they from Sheba will come. They will come, bring gold and incense, and they will show forth the praises of Yahweh. All the flocks of Kedar will be gathered together to you, and the rams of Nebaioth shall minister unto you, and they shall come up with acceptance to my altar, and I will gather the house of my glory. Who are these that fly as a cloud and as the doves to their windows? Surely the coast shall wait for me and the ships of Tarshish first to bring your sons from afar, their silver and their gold with them. In the name of Yahweh, your Elohim, to the Holy One of Israel, because he has glorified you. And it shall come pass in that day that Yahweh shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria, Egypt, and Panthos, and Cush, and Elam, and Shinar. And he shall set up a nest, a banner from the nations, and gather that, assemble the outcasts of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. And so Isaac and his friend shall be brought to the land of Israel by a foreign ship, manned by a captain and a crew who wish to help in the resettling of the scattered remnants of Ephraim and Judah, the people of Yahweh. And down the Bark River and into the Rock River, and they find themselves among dozens, then hundreds of others, most of whom they have never seen or heard of before. And down the Mississippi and the bigger ships and into the Gulf and across the Atlantic and through the Straits of Gibraltar and through the Mediterranean Sea, passing Crete and Cyprus to the port of Haifa. Some come from Australia, a lot from Africa and from India, from Russia and Argentina and from China, all heading towards the coast of Israel. Haifa is the largest port and chief port of entry into the new land. And there they settle and begin a new life. They plant groves and build shelters, more like sukkah at first. But soon, among the highest priorities, they travel to Jerusalem to meet the king, Yeshua HaMashiach, the Messiah, and his kodeshim. They mingle with some whose names in history were Abraham and Enoch and Noach and Moshe and Ruth and Miriam and Yosef and Yehuda and Yaakov, Yohanan and Sepha. Lydia, Paul, Seth, and of course, every young Marine's favorites, Joshua and David. The prophets who recorded the messages we read here in Isaiah and Amos and Daniel and Ezekiel and Micah. Yes, they're all here too. Everyone wanted to meet more Kodeshim, to spend more time listening to the real stories of the details lost and never recorded. And Yeshua seemed personally interested in and somehow had time to talk to each of the thousands. He seemed to be in no hurry. His intimate knowledge of each individual made conversation direct, inspiring, personal, and comforting. He really was interested in each of the sheep of Israel and Judah. However, time had to be made for others, and besides, there was a lot of work to do. And there would be opportunity to return to Jerusalem three times a year, for now on and for 1,000 years and more. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountains of Yahweh's house shall be established in the tops of the mountains and shall be exalted in the hills, and all nations will flow into it. And many people shall come and say, "Come you, let us go up to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of Elohim of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem." And then on to an inheritance. It's special and unique. Just north of Jerusalem, near the small burned-out village of Tekoa, Isaac is given a personal property, stating and starting into a new life filled with challenges and adventures. "And they that be of you shall build the old waste places, and you shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You and shall be called the repairer of the breach and the restorer of paths to dwell in." From the remnants of the recent battles of Gog and Magog and Meshach and Tubal, who had come to spoil, there is 7 months of burying the dead and cleansing the land. And then on to replanting and rebuilding. "And they shall build the old place, build the old waste, and they shall raise the former desolations. They shall repair the waste cities and the desolations of many generations. And I will make them and the places round about my hill a blessing. And I will cause the shower to come down in its season. There shall be showers of blessing. And the tree in the field shall yield her fruit, and the earth shall yield her increase. And they shall be safe in their land, and shall know that I am Yahweh, when I have broken the bands of their yoke and delivered them out of the hands of those that serve themselves of them. And they shall no more be prey to the heathen, neither shall the beast of the land devour them. But they shall dwell safely, and none shall make them afraid. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, I am jealous for Zion with great jealousy, as I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus says Yahweh, I have returned to Zion, and I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, and the mountain of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, there shall yet old men and old women dwell in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, if it be marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of the people in those days, should also be marvelous in my eyes, says Yahweh of hosts. And so they build and they rebuild the paths and the plazas and the houses and the cities. But now important, notice that these are done by the hands of men and women with hard work, dedication, and sweat. But under the guidance and direction and instruction and the mentoring of Yeshua and the sons of Elohim, the Kaddishim. Now when I, like you, suppose considering the world tomorrow, the kingdom of Elohim and the millennium, we can put a lot of focus on ourselves there. So I hope and pray that you're planning here to focus on the role, not as a resurrected saint, as a Kodeshim and the power to rule over the nations, being part of the better direction. But like you, let's spend some time not thinking about ourselves, dreaming of ruling over the nations, of being kings and priests and rulers and royal jobs, sitting under and ruling over people who have a passive role, just sort of sitting under the fig tree, sipping milk and honey, while the sons of Elohim provide all the life on a silver platter. Today, let's analyze not so much the roles of the sons of Elohim during the millennium, but the life of a man and the men and women such as Isaac. Let's consider a principle. Psalms 127:1 says, except Yahweh build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except Yahweh keep the city, the watchman waketh, but in vain. Now, the principle is clear that Yahweh directs, he's the builder, but their laborers, their workers who actually do the actual work. Here it says that Yahweh does a work, builds the house, but consider what it's saying here. He's doing it through his servants. Now, as soon as the immediate needs of the remnant, in fact, while they're being taken care of, the seeds of a new educational system is being put into place. Organizing a righteous, law-abiding society is dependent upon effective education. Such an educational system is a high priority. Educational systems are established based on the law of Yahweh, such as, you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary, I am Yahweh. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees the fruit of her field. Your threshing shall reach to the vintage, and the vintage until sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in the land safely. I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts from the land, neither shall the sword go out throughout your land. So early on, all are taught the relationship between the laws of Yahweh and success, the real laws of success. With my soul I have desired you in the night, yes, with my spirit within me. I will seek you early. For when your judgments are in the earth, your inhabitants of the world will learn righteousness. And they that erred in spirit shall come to understanding, and they that murmured shall learn doctrine, that is, instruction. Assemble yourselves and come and draw near to me, you that escaped to the nations, that had no knowledge, that set the wood of the graven image, and pray unto Elohim that cannot save. Tell me and bring them near. Yes, let them take counsel together, who has declared this from the ancient time, who has told it from that time. Have not I Yahweh, and there is no Elohim besides me, a just Elohim and a Savior, and there is none beside me. Look unto me and be saved, all the ends of the earth. I am Elohim, and there is none else. I have sworn by myself, and the word is gone out of my mouth, and in righteousness shall not return, that every knee shall bow and every tongue shall swear. Surely one will say, in Yahweh I have righteousness and strength, even to him that shall men come, and all that increase against him shall be ashamed. In Yahweh shall all the seed of Israel be justified in glory. And thus says Yahweh, your Redeemer, Holy One, I am Yahweh, your Elohim, who teaches you to profit and who leads you by the way that you should go. So Elohim teaches his people to perform a job rather than just doing it himself. Here, leads in the Hebrew is a hithel, a particle construct, which causes you to do, not just drags you along, but causes you to do it. It's the same binyan used when Israel came out of Egypt. He led them out of Egypt. He actually caused them to go out of Egypt. And that's the Hebrew is important there. That's the way that he is leading, causing you to happen there. And Elohim teaches us what to do and how to do it and how to do the work while he guides us to success. But we do the work. And if we study the record of how Yahweh teaches throughout the Bible and the thread through all these millennial scriptures, you will find very few sermons, very few lecture formats like we're doing now. You'll find very few teachers standing in the podium with things hooked onto their head there in front of a class, a lecture type of training. Instead, Yahweh walked and talked in the garden with Adam and Eve. And he walked and he talked and he dined with Abraham. And Moses spent time person to person on the mountain. And Yeshua walked with his disciples in a constant commentary on observations and events as they unfolded. And Paul was taken to the Arabian desert where he communed in person with Yeshua. But first, notice how Yahweh instructs our children. Shema Yisrael, Yehovah, Yahweh, our Elohim, Yahweh is one. You shall love Yahweh, your Elohim, with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. And you shall teach them diligently to your children and talk of them when you sit in the house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise up. Shall bind them upon signs upon your hand, and they shall be frontlets in your eyes. And you shall write them in the post of your door and near your gates. The principle is what we call mentoring. Frequent daily applications. Study in action. Principles coupled with abundant physical and action links. And when a key element needs to be added that is not clear, aha, direct word from the master. This is how Yahweh will teach his children in the world tomorrow, learning through application, mentoring, plus direct vision. Yahweh shall guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought, make fat your bones, and you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And they that be of you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called a repairer of the breach and a restorer of paths to walk in. And in Acts 3:20 it says, and he shall send Yeshua Messiah HaMashiach, which before was preached to you, whom the heavens must receive in the times of restitution of all things, which God has spoken in the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world. Isaiah 51, for you shall comfort Zion, and shall comfort all her waste places, and shall make her wilderness like Eden, and her desert like the garden of Yahweh. Joy and gladness shall be found therein, thanksgiving and the voice of melody. Isaac has now begun training in agriculture with a minor in engineering. He's met a young, beautiful woman from Ireland named Taya, and they're planning a life, a long, long life together. They've already started building their future home on a ridge overlooking the Jordan Valley. And when they arrived, it was a sandy, dry desert with a dry wadi going east. But now, after some time and lots of effort, there are springs along the ridges and creeks merging into the rivers and emptying into the distant Jordan itself. A new east-west valley is nearby, one of many which encourage rain into the previous eastern dry landscape. Isaac, Taya, and their growing family are learning technical agricultural principles and details while applying Yahweh's way of life. Gardens and trees are now actively being planted and are spreading towards the distant Jordan. Life is not, however, all work. There's time, ample time, a factor in God and the quality of high quality of life and the productivity and so many things God desires and we desire. The absence of a need for a military-industrial complex, large police forces, huge prisons, oppressive taxation, oppressive governments, and abundant production, and all living in a world that is living God's ways. The whole world is keeping the Sabbath, Yahweh's feast days. Imagine being off for 3 feasts per year. Not just time for Sukkot, but for 3 pilgrimage feasts every year. Okay. And a time to travel and to learn. And every 7 years, the principle of sabbatical year. Not just for farmers, but to study, to serve, to help someone, to travel, to plan, to further your education. Rebuilding a wasted landscape. It is not yet a very little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and the fruitful field shall be esteemed as a forest. And the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom like a rose, and it shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. And the glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it, and the excellence of Carmel and Sharon. And they shall see the glory of Yahweh and the excellency of our Elohim. And the parched ground shall become a pool, and a thirsty land springs of water, and the habitation of dragons, and the habitations of dragons where each shall lay shall be the grass with reeds and rushes. And behold, I will make you a new sharp threshing instrument having teeth, and you shall thresh the mountains, and shall beat them small, and shall make them as shaft. Now, why a threshing machine? Why in the world a machine? Yahweh and Yeshua could have just made the passages, you know, boom, boom, just split them open there by earthquakes or other kind of miracles or other geological events which he controls. But he makes, that is, and directs the making of a machine to thresh mountains that people are to make and to use to do the job. And you shall fan them, and the wind shall carry them away, and the whirlwind shall scatter them. And you shall rejoice before Yahweh, and shall glory in the Holy One of Israel. When the poor and the needy seek water, and there is none, and a tongue fails for thirst, I, Yahweh, will hear them, and I, Elohim of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the river in the midst of the valleys, and I will make the wilderness a pool of water and the dry land springs of water. That sounds what we call terraforming, a changing of the land. And it is only through the direction of Yahweh that the land is to be terraformed, not man's cocky ideas, but through his plan. So Isaac himself and his wife Teah helped build the threshing machine prototypes, the ones that open up the valley from Tekoa going eastward, and those along Wadi Ephraim, allowing rain-bearing clouds to move across the western range, watering the eastern slopes and the western slopes of the Transjordan to Reuben and Gad. And I will plant in the wilderness cedar and the shittim tree and the myrtle and the oil tree, and I will set in the desert the fir tree and the pine and the box tree together. Now ask, will Yahweh plant, Elohim plant these himself? Will he go out and put those in there? Or will he direct his people to plant these trees? That they may see and know and consider and understand that the hand of Yahweh has done this and the Holy One of Israel has created it. And here is a description of the process of the rebuilding of the terrain done by the hand of Elohim through the work of his people, preparing the land for cultivations. And you can read Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 and see the benefits of doing things by Yahweh's way. And all these blessings shall come to you and overtake you if you shall hearken unto the voice of Yahweh Eloheinu. Blessed shall you be in this city, blessed shall you be in the field, blessed shall be the fruit of your body and the fruit of your ground and the fruit of your animals and the increase of your cattle and your flocks of your sheep. Blessed shall be your basket and your store. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. And building a new transportation network. Isaiah 11 touches on this, and there shall be a highway for the remnant of the people who shall be left from Assyria, like it was to Israel in the day that he came up out of the land of Egypt. In that day there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrians shall come to Egypt, and the Egyptians to Assyria, and Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. In that day shall Israel be a third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom Yahweh of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, Israel, my inheritance there. Now consider maybe not just roads like we have now with tar and cement and so forth, but maybe something like magneto rails running at 400 miles an hour, quiet, safe, non-polluting, run by alternate, maybe solar or wind generated, or other kinds of energy, electromagnetic systems, or maybe magnetic levitation propulsion systems. Lots of things can be done there. And many other options, maybe new systems of anti-gravity lifting or propulsion technologies to propulse along the way there. So Isaac is a typical person living in that wonderful world tomorrow. He and Teah have developed, and family have developed, a fig tree farm for 100 years, exploring throughout Israel and Lebanon, exporting throughout Israel and Lebanon. Then Isaac and Teah took a sabbatical year to learn the technology of the magneto-levo rail engineering. And living in a world of increasing gladness and increasing technology, but always linked to the land, always a land-based economic support. They took another year off, another sabbatical year, to volunteer and assist in developing and building the much-needed magneto-levo rail line across to Africa. Now, why does Elohim fool with all of this In a moment, in the billionth of a nanosecond, Elohim could create a universe, a big bang, similar, or any other way. In 6 days, he can create a perfect world, one for fit and inhabited by his very, very good creatures. But did he really, really need 6 days to do that? Did he do it in 6 days not because it took that long, but for his own reasons, offer a lesson to his creation? And why does Elohim bother with what man can do on this small planet there? Small planet circling a small solitary sun in the third branch of the second spiral arm of the number two galaxy in a medium-sized galaxy cluster in the outer clusters, outer reaches of the Virgo supercluster, itself only a speck in the cosmic cluster network. But consider, just as we love to see and participate in the first steps and the first words in the development of our own sons and daughters, so Yahweh, the ideal Father, enjoys and loves and reveals and revels in the simplistic, infantile efforts of his very own sons and daughters. It is characteristics of Yahweh that even though he can accomplish all things with a flip of a little finger, yes, a dabar, or spoken word, or maybe a focused thought, but this great being who creates and sustains this vast universe, from the furthest quasar and the Sephir galaxies to the giant black hole in the galactic centers, to the microbial and flora of the deepest floors, who knows the stars and the billions, 20 billions of people in history by name, he is omnipotent. He is the creator, sustainer, and he's in charge. And he is completely committed to, and his involvement is intimate with his human children, observing, overseeing, managing the restoration of all things, restoring them through his sons and daughters, through all men that then, in that great day, all his servants. Did you engineers ever teach your children basic physics? Did you investors ever teach your children the basics of the stock market system? Did you secretaries ever teach your children the basics of computer system and system organizations? Did you accountants ever teach your children how to balance a checkbook? Homemakers, did you teach your children how to plan and cook dinner? Janitors, did you teach your how to efficiently clean and organize the garage? Nutritionists, did you enjoy teaching your children the basics of nutrition? Carpenters, did you teach your children, enjoy teaching your children how to lay out a straight line? And physicians, did you teach your children the basics of anatomy and physiology? Then, as we are so pleased to teach our children with what little we know, to inspire them to achieve and accomplish ever-growing skills, so does our Heavenly Father. He simply, but on a much, much grander level, takes pleasure in teaching his children. The conclusion, I think, is clear and unequivocal, that Yahweh takes greater pleasure in seeing his children using his laws solve the problems and teaching them to succeed than just doing it himself with a minor expenditure of effort, which he could have done directly. The emphasis is on the pleasure of teaching, the most noble of professions. And if truly only our Messiah and his Father, Yahweh, are truly Rabbi, it should be clear now that there will be plenty need for educated carpenters, stonemasons, engineers, accountants, shipbuilders, highway planners, geologists, metallurgical scientists, agriculturists, forestry specialists, merchants, homemakers, and teachers. But how the physical world is reconstructed, what about the biological world and the world of plants? Isaiah tells us that the wolf shall dwell with a lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with a kid, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the little child shall lead them, and the cow and the bear shall feed them, and the young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and the suckling child shall play on the hole of the asp, and the winged child shall put his hand on the crocodile's den. And they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Yahweh as the waters covers the sea. Now, what does it take to make a lion into a vegan? Well, appetite, obviously. That means that his whole neurological system all has to be reprogrammed. His teeth. The lion can't eat. He can't grind hay. He'd starve. And his stomach and intestines, it would be all clogged up. He's going to need to have some extra pouches and changes in his whole gastrointestinal system, change in his stomach acids, intrinsic factors, and intestinal motility. The hormonal system has to be changed. Liver and pancreatic systems have to be altered to a vegetarian type system. The taste and the smells, the feet and the claws, and his temperament, meaning his brain and his brain chemistry. Rather than lying around prowling with muscles and metabolism built for long, lazy vistas, then brief, powerful, anaerobic type 2 muscle bursts, violently catching, killing prey, then long periods of rest again, to change into a creature spending all day grazing and regurgitating and eating more grass and hay and vegetation. Now, some scholars have treated this Isaiah lion as a metaphor of an idealistic world that holds spiritual lessons, a world where righteousness reigns and there's a triumph of good over evil, a spiritual lesson, but not to be taken literally, a spiritual shalom, but not a literal one. But I would contend that the description here and elsewhere recorded is not only literal, but that the detailed physical context and its extensions requires a real world from which we can then understand the higher spiritual lessons. A world really, really free of harm, physical and spiritual, and that this is not only possible, but that it is sure to happen. Now, this world tomorrow lion could be considered an impossible literalistic transformation unless one fully comprehends the complexity and the thoroughness of the changes in the world that Isaiah is describing. In the context of the prophet's writing, there is a description of the desperate spiritual situation of the 7th century BCE ancient Israel, true. And all who read this book find this spiritual depravity linked to deplorable physical conditions, which resulted from the violations of Yahweh's laws, which was extant in the days of Isaiah, and even more so in our day. The prophet clearly links a millennial revival of spiritual understanding and obedience to the teachings of Yahweh, the Torah, to physical changes in the land and changes in the world at large. The message of Isaiah is universal. The extent of the revival includes universal peace, universal prosperity, a change in the nature of man, and of the real world, from mountains and rivers and deserts and climates to correspondingly complex biological changes here and elsewhere as described. Now, that being said, how can the lion change? You focus on the lion, but we also ask about the wolf, which was really with a lamb there in Isaiah, and the serpent there. Now, again, through miracles, you know, Yahweh could do quick flip of his little finger, debar, just a word, brief thought, change all that. Yes, that's possible, but what if he's consistent, and I contend that he is, he will show us how to bring these changes about. He will work with his human children to bring about not only the physical changes described earlier, but also the profound biological changes also. Now, in our day, we live in a day where knowledge is not only increasing, it is exploding. In the last 12 years, there has been immense, as I've spoke before on this subject, there's been tremendous increases in the understanding of the universe, space, Earth, but particular in biology and in genetics. Now, at one time, the big deal was to get the Human Genome Project done. It was Nobel Prize for doing that. Billions of dollars spent on that there. Now, code now in hand, and the biochemical and structure, functional genetics following in the wake, the needed details turned out to be even more vast. But there's been good things done. There's been a genetic production of human insulin. Back when I was a young Torah observant doctor, caring for lots of Torah observant people with diabetics, you know, nobody wanted that. What we had is pork insulin, you know. Nobody, you know, should we take pork insulin, should we not take pork insulin? And some died with those decisions there. But now that's not a decision because we just have insulin that's produced in vats through genetic engineering, produced by vats of bacteria. And it's actually human insulin, so you don't worry about the allergies and so forth. So growth hormone now is available, human growth hormone is now available. The wonder and a miracle for those who need it, but as expected, there's also abuses of it. And for our greedy, altruistic, monetary purposes there. The promise of genetic changes for inborn errors of metabolism, of genetic diseases and diabetes and heart diseases and stroke, such things as multiple sclerosis, brain injury, and spinal cord injury, was just a promise, but now it is actually very possible in many of these areas. I have been personally referred a number of patients of mine with spinal cord injuries for stem cell changes in their spinal cord. Some have been successful and some have not. But there's a world of genetics out there, and it is increasing even as we do it. And even on our polluted planet, corrupt religious and governmental systems, our industrialists and materialistic academic institutions, and human greed and human nature and human greed, yet in spite of all that, we're making monumental progress there. Can we change the nature of an animal and hen and hare's offspring? Sure, we can do that. But all of this in our days is limited by human effort alone, isolated from the mentoring of Yahweh and Yeshua. Their mental systems and their systems blocks and their barriers. There's wrong turns in analysis. And even more, their immoral and selfish aberrations of good intentions. Our world continues a mixture of good and evil. The world we live in today of greed and altruistic motivations. Now that being said, what can we expect? What can we expect? What can we be sure of? We will see these diseases cured in the world tomorrow. And we and our children and our grandchildren will have a hand in that reconstruction. Now what if Yahweh directly guided man and his sons and daughters in detailed discovery and godly applications of biological walls? What if the greed factor was removed and the selfish aberrations were gone? Now, there's a Proverbs 29:18 is a popular proverb that most of us know, and that says, "Where there is no vision, the people perish." It's a simple, seems to be a simple concept, but there's more to that than just a simple concept there. The lo means no, and hazan doesn't simply mean vision, like you're seeing. It actually implies a it implies a divine vision, a divine communication. You know, it's direct divine input. And if we were to translate this more literally, it would be, where there is no divine revelation, the people perish, because the people dispense in confusion. And we see that even now in simple things. Now, I can remember back in college, I was a chemistry major, and one night I was struggling on this terribly complex physical chemistry problem, and I struggled with it, and hours going through it, and I couldn't, son. I just finally exhausted, fell on my bed and fell asleep, and asleep about 90 minutes, and suddenly I dreamed the answer. I dreamed the answer so clear, and I was able to wake myself up and write it down there. And I got an A on that rather than failing it. So now, was that God doing it? I don't know, but the point is there are these aha moments. You know, we struggle on things, and suddenly, oh, the answer is so clear there. And we today all can, how these can relate to these various kinds of experiences, and about how we have these insights, sudden, I call it information packets that are suddenly delivered to them. And that's sort of unusual in my life. I remember that incident there. But in the world, this world tomorrow, these things will be common, because whenever we need the answers, it's readily available just by asking there. Okay. Leviticus 26 says, "And I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid, and I will rid evil beasts of the land." So a land free of evil beasts. Now, Yahweh promised a land free of evil creatures. But when we consider the world even today, and if you go to the land now, there's very little risk of being attacked by a bear or a wolf or a lion. So what are the real evil beasts in the land that we need to be rid of? The real enemies are really microbes in our world. We can't see them, but they're all around us there. Now, malnutrition, eradication of a worldwide good nutrition, we just described how that will happen. This will go a long way to establishing good health. But good nutrition, however, will not solve malaria, schistosomiasis, sleeping sickness, or yellow fever. But these could be eliminated by changing the nature of the mosquito and the tsetse fly, changing the food of the female from the blood to fruit would simply resolve that. Equine encephalitis, West Nile virus, and lots of other viruses we could add to here and there. It's all related to this nature of the mosquito, and that could be changed by genetic engineering. There actually are projects in Florida on the Keys there where there's been some genetic. It's not doing this way of doing it, but it's actually having to do with the way they breed and die off. So that there's genetic changes in our world today, but you know, it's not being guided necessarily, and there's lots of debate about it there. But mosquitoes do eat fruit. They eat plants mostly, but some, and only some, suck blood for their eggs, but not all. So if we could just introduce a gene from the mosquitoes that do that, and let me tell you, my oldest son is a professor of genetics, and introducing these genes is not just simple. It's not just there's genes squirted in there. There's RNA enzymes that just sort of destroy it, so you have to have ways of doing that. But if you could introduce those things there, that we could change and spread in a systematic way around the world, and it could eliminate it. And that this is not impossible, but it would need guidance, not from the EPA, not from the World Health Organization, but from the Master of Creation to guide through the maze of complicated and limiting factors. This is necessary if we're to not unduly and inadvertently upset the balance and the benign and necessary systems. But they can be done, and I believe they will be done, and it will finally be fulfilled that Yahweh blessed them, and Yahweh said to them, be fruitful and multiply and restore the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish and over the sea and over the fowl of the earth and every living thing that moves upon the earth. Yahweh's always intended for man to have dominion over the entire biosphere to the point where we would say, Hine to miod, behold, it was very good. This, through systematic changes in human activity, righteous living, through systematic changes in the world of the biosphere, the world will be rid of evil creatures. No more hepatitis, no more AIDS, no more typhoid or polio or emphysema, and no more China viruses. These will require changes in the viruses themselves. And then no more cancer or arthritis or congenital deformities or a host of other related diseases there. And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped, and then shall the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb man sing. For the wilderness, in the wilderness, waters shall break out, and streams in the desert. So along with the watering of the desert, streams in the desert, so will neurological problems of deafness and paralysis, spinal cord injury, traumatic brain injury, cerebral palsy, and stroke, here described by the prophet, to include all kinds of neurological deficits. It will be a time for cure. Baruch Hashem. Yahweh shall guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and make fat your bones, and you shall be a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters fail not. And they that of you shall build the old waste places, and you shall raise up the foundations of many generations. And you shall be called to repair the breach and restore the paths that run to dwell in. Here we cannot escape the parallel of the land and the land being restored and physical health being restored. The prophet is exquisite in his linkage of restored land, restored physical health, along with the spiritual health, and the people like a watered garden. And the wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the bullock, and the dust shall be the serpent's meat, and they shall not hurt or destroy in all my mountains there. By the river upon the bank thereof, and on this side and that side shall grow all trees for meat, whose leaves shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit according to its months, and because their waters they issued out of the sanctuary, and the fruit thereof shall be for meat, and their leaves shall be for medicine. Now in these days, this has always been a perplex, you got trees for food, but medicines? Why need medicines? A fascinating combination there. Food for nutrition, sure, but what about medicine? Special plants. It's an obvious question that here should be, why is medicine needed in a time when there's no diseases or ailments? For any ailments, what would not Yahweh not just miraculously heal as he could, especially when he's physically present on the earth and there's knowledge of Yahweh that's covering the seas? The question does not imply that Yahweh does not heal miraculously when he chooses to. It does, however, imply that he gives mankind means and methods, but that he expects mankind to apply them thusly, supplied specific physical treatments. Now, it's obvious that these changes in the world and society and culture and climate, physical changes in the cities and the farms and the creatures and mankind himself will take a long time, probably hundreds of years. The earth inhabitants ever improving over 1,000 years, what would then the lifespan be in this world tomorrow? Consider if all diseases were systematically eliminated and those that cause life-threatening serious harm are miraculously healed, such as serious trauma, and genetic defects in our genome and epigenetic imprinting are corrected, like it is in other creatures, how long will a man live in the millennium? Acts 3:21 shows some sign of this. He says, whom the heavens must receive until the times of the restitution of all things, which God has spoken by his holy prophets since the world began. Now, note that restitution is really restoring, or restoration. And that's really not unclear that all things here mean a lot. A world under Yahweh, a world like the Garden of Eden, a world of perfect health without diseases. I would submit to you that a potential lifespan of 1,000 years will be possible. It is erroneous to think that the psalmist limited human life to 70 years in Psalm 90:10, for the days of our years are 70, if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is our strength labor and sorrow are soon cut off and we fly away. Does this, many people interpret this, mean that 70 years is the lifespan that God expects us to live? But that really can't be, because even today, a baby born in America, despite all the issues going on, pollution and things, a baby born in America has a life expectancy of 80 years. And of women, actually 82 years. And if you're a lifelong Adventist, you add 10 years on top of that. The group of people that is increasing, the largest number in the group are the numbers of people who live over 100 years. Lifespan continues to rise. Last 2 years has actually dropped a bit, but over the last 20 years it continued to rise, even in the evil, polluted, violent world. Most longevity scientists today, those who study the human gene and it tends to cut off at certain times, say that the human lifespan should be about 125 to 150, even in today's world. Genesis 2:17 says, but the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die. Now notice here it says, the day that you eat thereof shall surely die. And what did that happen? Did Adam and Eve die in that yom that they ate of the tree? Well, we know the answer to that, because Peter says in 3:8, behold, be not ignorant one thing, that one day is with Yahweh as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is a day. Now that don't necessarily mean exactly, you know, but it means it's a long, long, long time there. But it does say 1,000 there. And it goes on to say, for Yahweh shall comfort Zion and shall comfort her waste places, and he shall make her wilderness like Eden and her desert like the garden of Yahweh. Joy and gladness shall be found there, in thanksgiving and the voice of a melody. And a characteristic of Eden was, originally, you shall not die. And Isaiah goes on to say, you shall build houses and inhabit in them. They shall plant vineyards and eat fruit of them. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree are the days of my people, and mine elect shall long enjoy the works of their hand. Time, ample time, a factor in the high quality of life and the productivity and so many things that God desires and that we desire. Imagine then, just like Isaac and Taya and their kids and the grandkids, so the whole world will be off for 3 feasts per year. Not just Sukkot, but 3 pilgrimages per year. Time to travel, time off every 7 years, a sabbatical year, not only for farmers, but for others. Isaac, our 26-year-old friend, who had lived into this new world, he's developed a fig tree farm for 100 years, exporting throughout Lebanon and Israel. He took a sabbatical year to learn the technology of the magneto-level rail engineering, did that for 100 years. Now considering another profession, living in a world of increasing gladness and increasing technology, but always linked to the land, always based on the economic support of the land. And as mentioned, he took the year off to develop the land, magneto level land throughout Africa. And Isaac is still living on in this world tomorrow in joy and health and accomplishment, all at the right old age of 1,026. He and his three Marine friends who are alive at the bank of the Bark River in Wisconsin have exceeded the ages of Adam and Enoch and Methuselah and Seth. He and Taya have dozens of children, many grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, and great-great-grandchildren, which he sees regularly, but especially on Sukkot every year. He has helped to teach these in the way of Yahweh, the way of give, the ways of abundant life. And what you can see today, even though we can only see partly, we can see that even physical life in the millennium will be exciting and fulfilling, full of adventures, discovery, profitable work, long lives, full of education, travel, personal development, and public service. All this is just one part of the great plan of Yahweh, a coming shalom, a world of tomorrow, a world of full of peace and hard work. A shalom plan made possible by the planning and the unselfish life and the sacrifice of the Lamb, our Messiah. The psalmist says, "Praise ye Yahweh. Praise, O ye servants of Yahweh. Praise the name of Yahweh. Blessed be the name of Yahweh from this time forth and forevermore. Shalom Aleichem."